listen to the podcast. You mustn't listen to the episode. We will kill you if you finish listening to the episode.
Welcome to another episode of the Mind Duck Books podcast. This time we're talking a metafiction, horror, fantasy, something. By Cliff Barker. It's only 248 pages, released in 2007. And the people who joined me might not be as happy as they expected. How are you feeling?
I am very well today. Hello.
Great. Thank you for coming back, Christina.
I'm not entirely sure it's like due to the book that I'm feeling well, but yeah.
Too bad. How are you, Martine?
Yeah, disappointed mostly. But otherwise, like, okay in the life, but the book.
In the life.
I guess I had expectations.
I finished it like a month ago, so I've gone through all the stages of, I wouldn't call it grief necessarily.
You've processed it enough.
But I've managed to process it as like, yep, well, that was a book.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I finished it like maybe an hour ago, so it's very fresh in my mind.
Okay, well, maybe I've managed to forgotten bits, and that's helped.
You should probably get all the bad jokes out of the way immediately. So, are you disappointed in yourself that you haven't burned this when they ask you to burn it?
No. I like that got annoying so fast. Very fast.
Yeah, I was like going with it for like the first third of the book, and then I was like, okay, yeah, this is too much. But also, like, I was very, very disappointed that I couldn't find any like statistics or any mention of people who actually burned the book. I tried to look up online if there were like some...
Oh wow, I haven't tried it.
Something, some mention at least, that somebody was like, yeah, I had to burn this like in the middle, so that I didn't find anything, which is kind of a shame.
I don't think that, like, if somebody had burned it, it probably would have been just to...
They are not alive anymore, so...
No, yes. like just to have fun, ha ha ha, we are big fans of the book, we are burning the book, aren't we quirky? Otherwise, I kind of doubt that anybody would be affected or influenced by the book and the pleading in the book and the threats of the book. Oh, I am coming to kill you. Sure you are.
Yeah.
like okay.
I was sure you would love this part. So we should say that this book, the premise and the reason why I wanted to read this for a long time, and thank you for going on this journey with me, this is all my fault this time, is that if you finish reading this book, you'll release a demon. And the demon warns you, and the book begs you to burn the book. And that it's like very meta. It's just like a conversation with the reader.
But to be fair, he never says if you like release him if you burn the book, I think.
Well, we'll get into it in the spoilers, but
yeah.
Well, the premise is that
we don't know. we don't know what happened.
He keeps saying that like you need to end his existence. And like yes, first kind of appealing to your compassion, and then your disgust, and then moves on to all the threats and like I am behind you kind of stuff, and then
to do more of this voice, that's great.
Yeah.
And then in the end, he shockingly reveals, like, okay, maybe it's good you didn't burn me because you would have released me. Like, no shit. That was...
Spoilers.
I was not...
Spoiler alert. Spoiler
no, but, like, I was not shocked. Were you shocked at that point when he, like...
No, of course not.
What was the point of all
but
that?
But there was, like, a internal struggle in me. Like, during the reading of this book, I kind of, at the beginning, I had this, like, on one of my shoulders, there was, like, this angel, like, of compassion, and on other shoulder there was this, like, demon of logical thinking, and I, like, you know, the angel was like, you know, he's gone through some like terrible shit, you know, terrible things. He might not be lying. And like the demon is like, yeah, but he's also done like even more terrible things. So like, yeah. And the angel is like, yeah, but he's owning up to those mistakes. So it's like, you know, he's a solid guy. And then the demon's like, yeah, but he's like proud of those mistakes. So it's not really mistakes. And then the angel is like, yeah, but he fell in love and felt human emotions. Yeah, but all just to believe him, you know, he's a demon. So what do demons do? They lie? Yeah, they lie. They torture you. And they do everything so that you believe them to make what they want you to do. Okay, I guess that's fair. And then it kind of fizzled out. But at the beginning, I had these kind of like dilemma in what to believe and what to not believe about what the demon says. So that was kind of fun until maybe half of the book.
So maybe I shall ask, did you hate this?
The book or the framing device?
No.
I mean, both.
I hated the framing device. I didn't hate the book. Okay. The framing device actively worked against me as a reader. If it had been just in like twice at the beginning and then once at the end, I would have been able to get into the story and feel more for the character, possibly. Like, possibly I would have been able to get more into the story, but I was constantly being reminded that the book was talking to me, you know, constantly being brought back into my world where I'm like looking at a screen and like none of this is real. You know, I couldn't really immerse myself in the world. Not that I would necessarily want to.
The framing device was the reason I was interested. And I liked it. I have to admit that was my like favorite part of the week.
Yeah.
This is why I went to read it. Because I really like, I'm a big fan of Cliff Barker. No surprise if you listen to the other episodes. And I really like his way to be imaginative and have something really disgusting and get kind of under your skin with all this filth. And I keep saying that living in Japan is too clean, so I need my dose of filth. And I need something ugly and dirty and sleazy. And he can write those characters the best I've read. Like, I want something extremely sleazy, evil, with no excuses, and having the dirtiest, like, gory good time. And I was super excited for what you described, but to the 11th degree. I was expecting him to be so obnoxious and so disgusting and so in your face and so, like, terribly undifficult. Like, I was expecting him to ramp up how uncomfortable it is to read this, that you will actually want to stop reading it, and that would be the point of the book. Like, can you actually finish reading this?
See.
Because it's so bad and so horrible and so disgusting that you can't even read it anymore. And some people in the review said that they're so bothered by this, they stopped reading, but it wasn't, because of that, it was because
bothered
of what you said. It's
I was
of,
bored
yeah.
by
exactly,
like,
they,
yeah.
yes. Exactly. So in this sense, I'm very disappointed because the book is unnecessarily violent, like Christina said, and there are some things that are disgusting, and it's evil, blah, 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 but it's not really what I was hoping it was.
Yeah, so like, I wanted to ask you, as an avid reader of Cliff Barker, compared to his other books, the horror part of this book, how much does it
compare?
It's
very tame. It's very, very, very tame. It's like almost not there at all. The parts I liked in the other books are like the depth of the filth. Like, there's always something that gets under my skin surprisingly. Like, there's something that catches me off guard. I have to say that I like all the ideas behind this book. I like the premise. Like, I understand why he wrote it. I understand like what he was trying to do. I like all the plans, like all the points that he tried to achieve with this. I like, but it didn't work at all. And I think one of the main reasons is that it was too short and too long. We kind of agreed on this. We already talked about it a little bit outside of the podcast.
I agree with too long. I'm not sure about too short. What do you mean by too short?
We both agreed that if it was a short story, it would have been better.
Yes.
Right? If it was like a quarter of the way. Like,
That's true. For sure.
There's this series of books he wrote that I used to love as a edgy like emo teenager. I read all these short stories and it was called Books of Blood. Books of Blood, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there's like always like these gory short stories. And it would fit there quite well if it was very short.
Yeah.
And if he made it more extreme, like what happens, I guess. And if he wanted to make it long, like some of his other books, like I talked about Weave World recently, it's 800 pages. And it's like a demon that you can get a lot of depth and like his character, and it's really interesting, but it's a little bit too long. So I think if he aimed for like 500 pages, it would be the ideal.
Yeah, okay.
So what you said, you understood why he wrote this book. I did not. Why did he write this book? Please tell me.
Because his writing always has to do with imagination, memory, character, like what does it mean to be, remember, or feel something. And I really like those themes. Like, for example, in Weave World, the magic is based on you having the memory of something, and once you start losing the memory of it and you forget the person or the thing that happened, you lose the power over it. And I think that's an interesting concept, and they go into different worlds, and it's all like this system of like remembering things. So here, he wanted to, you know, kind of get into the reader's perspective, and he wanted to try something with the imagination being meta, so to speak, breaking the fourth wall. And he wanted to write all these suggestions to make you think like you're actually in danger reading a book that contains a demon. And I don't think anybody tried to do that. I don't think there's a book that actually pretends that there's a demon in it. So I think this idea is very interesting. Like, yeah, just the concept of having actual demon talking to you through the book. I don't think that's been done very much or at all, as far as I know.
Yes, I don't know. That.
So I think this idea really spoke to him. I think that's something he really wanted to explore. I like this concept. And I also like the ending, like the idea behind it. Like, you'll get into it with the spoilers, but the invention and the machine and how it works, it's kind of lame in the end. But the original plan that, for it, I guess,
that is kind of the point, yeah.
Was kind of interesting. I don't know. It didn't work, the book, at all for me, but I can appreciate what he was trying to do.
I'm still not entirely sure.
I agree on that part, like with... Like reading a book from the perspective of a villain is kind of fun, you know? And like having the villain actually talk to you, kind of, even though the conversation is just one way, it helps to kind of get into the fantasy of him actually being there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you said, it didn't really work. Like, I really tried to kind of imagine myself, like... try to imagine that the demon actually exists and everything to kind of intensify the horror for me. But yeah, it kind of didn't help that, as Christina said, that, yeah, he constantly reminds you that, yeah, he's this book, he's in this book, and he's like talking to you. So that kind of broke the you know, continuity of the whole story.
I was really hoping there would be more of the banter that Christina hated, like the pleading to burn the book and all that, that I thought that was just like the first step. And then there are some like quick mentions. For example, he says that the demon is there because you can see him in between the words when you move your eyes, and there is a blur between the lines of the text, so that's him moving around,
like,
the words.
And
so
that things like didn't that ever get mentioned again. That would be like interesting.
So that's what
to
I thought would be
on
the main point. And I thought there would be more and more ideas how to do something nonsensical like that. I thought there would be like a section, for example, like a chapter that would be completely out of context. And then he would say something like, oh, I have subconsciously suggested this. And then he would say something else and he would remember something he read. And he would be like, oh, he's trying to like manipulate me into something, or something clever with the demon trying to directly manipulate you. But of course, that's not there at all, unfortunately.
I think it's not... like that, if the idea behind the book is as you said, that like he wants to like manipulate the reader's emotions and make them like experience this, then a book is not a good format for that.
Okay.
And especially not this kind, because this book constantly reminds you that it's a book. And it constantly like makes you go back to your own world, as I already said. So if there had been some maybe interesting graphics, maybe some hidden words, some hidden clues,
yeah, that's
within
what I was
the
hoping
text,
there would be.
Then yeah, maybe, or if it would be like somebody finds a book and then something happens to the person who finds the book, then oh, and it's the book you're holding, then I guess. But
and it's kind of a shame because he is a great artist. I love his paintings. He does comic books, he directed movies, he worked on a video game. All his art looks, I love it. Like, he even made children books, by the way.
All his art looks super disturbing.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm not sure if I love it though.
Like, sometime I'm kind of interested to read Abarat, which is a children's story, but it's very disturbingly depicted. So, and people say it's interesting, like it's a different kind of children's story, but it's still good for children somehow, so I'm curious how that works.
Okay,
I haven't read it.
Yeah, that might be interesting to try.
So, to defend the writer a little bit, at this point in his life, 2007 the book was released, and he went through a bunch of very hard times. In 2008, he was told by a doctor that his lungs can absorb only 10% of the air that he should be breathing because of heavy smoking and other issues. And in 2012, he was in a coma for a long time. And the coma happened because he was at the dentist, which is my nightmare. We talked about that on our other episode. So please check out episode 21 if you want to hear the details. I hate dentists, and this was like my... So it's very... very funny that my favorite horror writer almost died because of a dentist. So whatever.
And what happened? Like,
yeah, just check out 21 episode 21.
We have to listen to the episode. Yeah.
He got an infection in a tooth, and it was like a root canal thing, and then the nerves in his tooth. There was like a pocket of pus in his gums that they forgot to treat, and then it got infected into his brain, and he went into coma. Oh my god!
I've had a root canal. Feel free to cut this out. It is the most painful thing I've ever experienced.
So I want to say that when he was writing this book, he was probably not being able to breathe very well, and he wasn't very good with his health. And this is also one of the fewer books that he wrote, because he's had like a long break in writing. And most of the famous books he wrote before this. So I kind of feel bad for him. And I saw his photo at a convention about 2 years ago when we were talking about the episode 21, and he looked so bad. I feel so poor man. He looked like a skeleton in a wheelchair, for lack of a better word.
Oh no.
But to be positive, I saw a photo of him very recently, like last month, and he looks so much better. He gained more weight, he looks healthier, and he's writing a new book, so I hope he's gonna recover. He's 70 years old now, I think.
Wow. Well, from what I've read of him, he looks like a really interesting person. I'm just not sure if he's the writer for me.
Yeah, of course not. Of course he isn't. So I cannot excuse a quick update on him, and in the sense of Hellraiser movies.
Yes.
Please check out episode 21, where I did a review of 10 Hellraiser movies. If you count the porn parody, 11 Hellraiser movies. And there was another Hellraiser movie last year.
Is there going to be a follow-up?
You should take photos of Christina while I say this. It's amazing facial expressions.
Yeah, that's because I don't really know what it is, so...
Yeah, don't. Just don't think about it. It's not for you. So the 11th Hellraiser movie in 2022 had a $14 million budget, which, by the way, the movie that happened before that had only $0.3 million budget. The budget was like nothing, and the movies were horrible. It's so bad. Just please listen to episode 21. I had too much fun with it. And this movie is good. So highly recommend it to Hellraiser fans. The new movie is good. Oh my goodness.
So they had a good budget now, and they had like a good director.
It's not like... great. It's not amazing. It's not super creative, but it's not bad. Yes.
So is that the...
Okay, I guess that sets the low kind of somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the big red Thanos-like monster with the horns cut off?
No.
No?
Is it the guy with the nails in his face in a square pattern? He's got
pinhead. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Like,
I'll
even
a picture
of that, so...
I think it's better to not see.
If you just search, I'm sure you've seen this. It's such a such a famous like image. I'll send it in the chat.
Okay.
They're called Cenobites, and they come from like hell, basically, or another dimension. And they believe that the biggest pleasure is pain.
Acupuncture gone wild.
Yes. And the story is that a guy who is like a hedonistic millionaire idiot, he doesn't have anything better to do with his life than to hunt down the most mysterious artifacts to get the most the most intense pleasure in his life he's ever experienced. When he opens it, these guys come in and he's like, "Let me show you some pleasure, bitch." And then he just gets, you know, torn into pieces and stuff. And it's like a horror thing.
Okay.
So movie 11. It's great designs. I love the designs of the monsters. Pinhead is a woman now, of course, because you have to be progressive.
Yeah.
The story is okay. Gore is like very much up to scratch with the various like the good better movies of the series. But my problem is it's too clean. Not enough filth.
So the same problem as in this book.
No, this book was filthy enough, but the new movie is like all the demons and the hellish creatures are like almost alien, slick, like smooth looking. The Hellraiser 2, which is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life, is so dirty. It's like all this slime and grudge and dust and crap. But in the new movie, it's too clean. So that's the only criticism I have. So if you like Hellraiser, I think this might be the third best out of the 12 movies. So definitely recommend it.
Okay.
Christina is horribly disgusted, and she should be, because all these movies are awful.
I'm not disgusted. I'm just like, yeah, I wouldn't want to watch that. It sounds kind of, nah.
Yeah, I know.
To be fair, I'll probably never watch it as well.
Creatively, I think Hellraiser 2 like is the most visually creative nightmare I've ever seen on film. I really think it's something different. And to say something different, also say something else I want to mention quickly, I didn't know that he also wrote Candyman. Do you know that movie?
I heard about it. But
it's like another horror movie that's kind of famous, and they did a remake in 2021. And that's pretty good too. I would recommend it also to people who like horror. I like that. Probably like the most reasonable, sensible, normal movie, not just gore. There's no gore in that movie, just a horror movie.
Okay, are there jump scares? Is it like, or is it just mostly psychological?
Maybe like tame jump scares. not bad.
If it's not too many jump scares, I might give that a try. Yeah. Advice, I don't like horror movies that are,
I don't know,
like,
I don't really care about jump scares, so I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It never gets me the jump scares.
Like the kind of horror that I would watch is like Hannibal, if you've seen the TV show. Like that was horror huge enough for me. It was just, jump scares not something I enjoy, because, yeah. Like I would have to turn off the music, because if the music isn't on, then I don't care whatever is jumping up on the screen can happen. Mm-hmm. But once the music starts being like loud or does a sound, like, nope, that's not nice.
Yeah, I agree. I understand. So just to sum up, Cliff Barker is alive. He's become an advisor for the Hollywood Horror Museum, whatever that means.
Okay.
I guess he's...
Go, Cliff!
Yeah. And there is a new, like, life-spanning, career-spanning documentary or book, I think, about him called Cliff Barker's Dark World that just came out.
Are you gonna read it?
I might look at it. I just, for the art, I really like his paintings and just designs. So, have you read anything else from him than this?
I tried the Imagica for a while. I think like I read like, I don't know, maybe 5% of the book, and it was like extremely boring. So
yeah.
I just couldn't.
It takes a while to. I think that book is like 1,000 pages or something.
It's really, really long. Yeah.
So it gets going, but it's a slow burn. So I would like to apologize that this is the only one you've read, because it's probably the worst I've read from him.
At least it's like, it's short, and yeah, it kind of does have some like contained message that doesn't really get across, but it has it somewhere hidden there.
Possibly.
Possibly, yeah.
Is there anything you like about this before we get into plot?
I really liked the relationship between... Shit, what's the name of the main character?
Jacobob
something. Yeah, Mr. Bigon. I liked the relationship between Jacobob and Quitoon. Mm-hmm. I thought that was... there was something there.
That's very much similar to what gets in the other books here.
The toxicity, the kind of, but that was interesting.
So if you have an interest for that, you might like some of his books, because this is like a bunch of villains that are super toxic and super filthy, sleazy, and they have to interact with each other. That's kind of the appeal, I guess.
I think I like it in small doses, so this might be like my. that was the one thing that I thought was interesting. Okay. Otherwise, not really.
Okay. Yeah, I see. Needless to say that we don't recommend this book, unfortunately.
But one thing I would say, if you like being like insulted a lot, if you're like a frequent, you know, r/roastme. Visitor on Reddit, and you have like posted there, this book kind of like helps you to have a similar feeling, maybe. Like, this book,
you know what?
Really, like,
it wasn't there enough. I will need more.
that's fair.
It was very mild. I thought there would be like a barrage of like offensive language directed at you, and didn't really happen.
But like, one thing I'm gonna say, if you are like going to read it, I would say actually read it, don't listen to the audiobook, because I tried both. I like listened to the middle part in the audiobook version, and the beginning I read, and the ending I read on Kindle. And with the audiobook, like the whole premise of the book just like is not there, because you're just listening to a person reading you this book that's supposed to be talking to you. And I would say like a heartfelt thank you for the narrator, Doug Bradley, for like sacrificing himself voluntarily to the demonation for even reading this book. But like, yeah, it didn't really work in the audiobook version.
I can imagine. So, burn this book. I'm not gonna burn my phone. Like, come on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm reading this on a Kindle, Mr. Demon. I'm sorry, but I kind of like my Kindle. Like, it's a very good Kindle. I'm kind of emotionally attached to my Kindle. Like, sorry, Mr. Demon, you're gonna have to wait. You know.
Well, maybe deleting the file works as well.
That's true. Ooh. It's like maybe it could like actually remove him from good. Yeah,
that's another thing I was kind of expecting, especially when they got into the book printing business, that I was sure they would get into an idea that he's being cursed to stay in the book by every single copy of the book, and by distributing and reading the book around the world, he is so much more cursed, and he would have to have everybody destroy every single copy until it's released or something like that. Not at all mentioned.
I would like that. That would be interesting.
That would be a nice plot.
How he's like split apart and yes.
And maybe and then I was like, my mind kept spinning, because I really like I said, the concept. So then I was like, okay, so if that happens, then probably he's gonna be like, oh, by the way, some of the readers, they already burned the book and we did a new edition, and I had those readers manipulated, and they're traveling around the world, and they might be behind your door ringing the bell right now, and they might kill you and burn the book as well, and there might be like a serial killer somewhere that's, and stuff like that. I was expecting would go like more meta, that he already, this is like edition 77, and you know, the murderer from the 60th edition, he did this and that, and I don't know, but none of that happens, unfortunately. That's what I meant by I was excited for this book, but
That would be
write
fun.
A fan
yeah.
fiction continuation yeah. of this book, or like a parallel of this book, which has all of your ideas. You have like a lot of good ideas for how this book should have gone.
I think with imagination, I really, really like what he comes up with. So I'm just sorry this one didn't work. To say something positive, I like the demon descriptions. I like the mother can spit fire and the father is a bastard and the tails. I like the meat pocket. The main character carves the scar so he can hide a knife inside of his skin. So these kind of things he writes about a lot. But the escapades of the demon wreaking havoc in the 14th century could have been lots of fun, but they were boring.
And inconsistent.
And unnecessarily violent, even for me, because usually the violence serves a purpose in the story that he writes. But here it was kind of like just for the fun of the violence, I guess. Like there wasn't any consequence to it or anything. I liked that the demon is an idiot, that he gets killed and impaled so much. So I like that part. He's not an intelligent demon very much. So that's kind of amusing, but yeah. And the ending was kind of like,
I was disappointed by the demon world. Because like at first I wasn't sure, like, okay, is this going to be, he's like drawing a metaphor between what it's like to grow up in disadvantaged circumstances and how that changes you and like that actually like it turns you into a demon. But like then I was like, no, he is actually just a demon, and the demon world is kind of normal. Like demons go to school. Like really demons go to school.
Doesn't make much sense, yeah.
It's just like meh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunately the consensus. Yeah. But I didn't hate it. It was easy to read. It was short. Yeah, so it's okay. I didn't feel like I wasted my time. I finally found out what this was because I wanted to try this for a long time. So thank you for doing that. I guess we could end the episode here, but if you're still curious what goes down, we'll try to go over the plot real quick. If you have any interesting details, please say so, but I am afraid you don't.
I'm sure I remember some bits that I was like, yep, that's weird.
So the story starts with Jacob Botch, who is a young demon, teenager, I guess, something, maybe, we don't know. And he is, I guess you could say, even tortured by his father called Gutmus. Peppy Gutmus, and his hobby is to write in his diary about how he would torture his father, inventing various torture devices. And his mother finds it, and they try to burn it so the father wouldn't see it, but the father finds it, and they start this chase. I like how, I always said, the mother has fire spit, so she spits on the pages of the diary to burn them, and the fire is so intense that Jacob cannot not watch that, and he falls face first into it and completely gets burned. So that part I was
very visceral, like explaining how his like face started bubbling with fat and everything. I was like not very nice to imagine.
that's all of his books like that.
Yeah.
So then the father starts chasing him because he's a father demon. He wants to kill his son, I think. I don't really know. He wants to kill him, but he starts shooting after him.
Yeah, well, he saw some, like, his name mentioned in the pages that were being booked, didn't he? So he was like, ah, you were writing about me, boy, and...
Yeah. I forgot about this voice. You should do it more often.
Yes.
And there's a sister, isn't there? First he mentions this sister that he's trying to protect, so he lets himself get beat up.
And sister, never mentioned again. There was like one mention of her name, and then like, that's it. That's everything.
I almost feel like he just had to write something, and he didn't have time to like fully fledge it out, and he didn't want to have just a short story because he needed to release something. I don't know. It's a strange
book. Well, that's what editing is for, surely.
Yeah.
That's fair.
No time to edit, I guess. So then they get to this place where different kinds of things like beer, steak, and I don't know what else is hanging from a rope. And Jacob starts drinking it, and the father catches up, and he also starts eating it and drinking it, and they both get caught into a net.
It's a trap.
and they start being hoisted up into somewhere. And this part I actually kind of liked. I liked the conversation between them.
Mm.
Like how the father is trying to do every single trick very badly to make the son not cut the rope so the father would fall to his death. Because the father has the knife in his meat pocket.
Yeah. So it's kind of a parallel to how this book tries to persuade us to burn the book, right?
Yeah, I didn't think about it.
He's doing the same mistakes as his father at one point throughout the book.
I guess. Yeah, that's an interesting parallel I didn't think about. But yeah.
But also it wasn't very well, you know, portrayed. So I don't think that's a good parallel to draw, but it was intended there, but not very well mentioned. So yeah, they were caught into this trap, pulled up while Papi Getmus is trying to get out of his net, and meanwhile Mr. B is cutting his rope slowly with his knife.
Mm-hmm. So they cut the rope, father dies, the rest of the rope and Mr. B are pulled up to our world, basically.
Yes.
To human world. Which I thought at first they were pulled up to heaven or something, but no, it's just human world.
Just normal world with priests and bad people, generally.
So did you get why they were catching the demons?
I think it was to explore and to for fun, and also... if you have a demon, you can point it at the demon, say, hey, it's a demon, kill the demon. Free entertainment!
Yeah, medieval fun, basically.
Yeah.
I also think... yeah, this as well, definitely. And I also think they, mentioned that they're gonna, they've been selling the skins of the demons, so they, hunting the demons for the skin for some reason. But what's so special about a demon skin... we don't know.
Yeah. So, they want to put a cloth on his face and chain him up and then cut him up for meat for dogs or something. But he manages to escape and he runs away to the girl who's cutting up the demons, right?
I think he runs away and then he kind of comes back a little and he sees the girl and is like, ah, you are so beautiful. I am in love. Run away with me. We can be happy together. And then he sees that, she doesn't mind her job. And then...
she's the daughter of the priest or something? Of one of the...
yeah, the...
Of one of the guys
of
who
the,
pulled
like,
up...
hunters, I guess.
Is she? Yeah, okay. She's the daughter of one of the guys who pulled him up. But those guys, I don't think they're priests. The priest or the archbishop?
Yeah, he there was one later. Priest in the group, but otherwise it was some sort of maybe merchant or some sort of influential man in the city who just hired these guys to hunt for a demon with him.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they had it as a long-term job because they definitely weren't doing it for the first time. But there was only one priest, and then they were gathering the demons for some sort of... there was a new bishop being appointed, right? Or something like that. Or new archbishop, maybe even.
Mm-hmm.
And these were sacrifices for him.
I thought that the archbishop at the start of the book is the archbishop at the end of the book, and the archbishop at the end of the book is a demon.
Is it? Is it the same guy?
I don't think so.
Because he and Quitun seemed to know each other, and Quitun was working for the archbishop, and he mentioned something the archbishop has his own demons as a demon guard. And then when an archbishop appeared at the end of the book, I assumed that was Quitun's boss. And the same guy.
That makes sense.
They didn't explicitly say it, but there's no reason it couldn't be true. Yeah, and it probably is true.
So maybe the whole time, all of the hunters and priests were working for the demons, and they murdered the old archbishop, and then they sacrificed a lot of demons to summon this mega demon and make him into an archbishop. I don't know. that's stretching it a lot. But I think the Archbishop is gonna be the same person. But I was feeling that there was like a mention that the old Archbishop was not. I don't know if dead, but there was something happened.
They executed him.
Something happened that there would be like a new Archbishop appointed.
Yeah, because like he was framed for something and they executed him. Burnt him at the stake or some kind of a public execution for the old Archbishop. And the new Archbishop is already there and with the guards, some of whom are probably demons since Quirtune is a demon. And he mentions something like once he meets Jacobok, they like, how did you get here? And something, he says something that made me think that the Archbishop has like demons with him as guards. And but I can't find the page now. And
yeah, that's okay. I don't know what you mean. Yeah, all of these things could be, unfortunately, not elaborated on very much. Sorry to skip back a little bit. I have made a note. I like the circles of hell that they were being pulled up on the ropes. They kept saying that they went through the fourth circle and the fifth circle and that.
That's from Dante.
Yeah. So I was like, wait a minute. They mentioned that they just went through the fourth circle, and I was like, that's gonna be somehow relevant to what they talked about. And then when he fell to his death, I was like, he fell through the fourth circle and he died or something. I was like, that's gonna be. So I looked it up, and not relevant.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, does the ninth circle of hell, which is like treachery, mm-hmm. I looked up, like, does it have any significance with the story?
No.
I was always mentioning, like, I'm a terrible demon from the ninth circle of hell.
Yeah.
It's like, so, okay, no. Okay, Mr. Botch, that's nice. So what can you do? Not really much, but okay. Yeah, I was hoping that, at least my idea of the story was that, like, he would be kind of trying to return back to the, like, back through the circles of hell, kind of like Dante, but in a demon way, which might have been fun. Like, I imagined that he would be, like, trying to return to his homeland, because Papi G is not there anymore, so, like, he could actually live there normally, maybe.
Go to demon college.
Have
demon.
A normal life, you know, like study like torture devices 101 in college and like be happy.
Could have gone far, it's true.
That could have also been fun to, you know, go to demon college and then...
It really wouldn't.
Okay.
I think that's a different genre.
That's something for the fan fiction, right?
Okay. Yeah, the coffee AU... coffee shop AU where Mr. B and Quirtune meet each other at Starbucks and fall in love. And
yeah,
I couldn't remember Quirtune's name, and when I was writing my notes it kept changing, and I kept writing like Quantlope, and at one point I wrote Quantum, and I was like Quantum Loop, and then I wrote Cantaloupe at one point, and I was like, damn it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
So at one point, finally, this Cantaloupe character appears. How do they meet? Do you remember?
Well, he's Mr. B is running away from the village people.
So he meets this girl, falls in love, runs away. She dies almost, but doesn't die. Gets burned. Then he watches this crucifixion. The burning of the priest or something, and then people attack him and he runs away, and then impale him and he runs away. It's all these escapades where like a knight impales him on a halberd and then he runs away.
Right, while he's running away, he sees this couple in a secluded spot.
Yes.
And they're going at it, and mm-hmm. he's watching them, and then they see mm-hmm. him, and he kills the guy, but he didn't really want to kill the guy. And he talks for a bit to the girl. And did he kill her in the end or not?
No, I think he just scarred her for life and left. I don't know. Whatever happened, I think he just like escapes and does something, escapes. And then finally he can't escape. So they chain him and impale him, and I don't know what they do. Yeah. And then Quantum Leap saves him.
Yeah.
And he saves him by exploding and killing everybody. Yes. Just with his demon powers.
And before saying that, he says, Mr. B, be gone. And so he's trying to protect him from the light searing everything. Well, yeah, it was a very strange scene. And then the story is interrupted once again by the demon in the book telling you to burn the book. And when
it's every now and then.
And then I guess it moves like several years later, where Mr. B is telling the story of how he and Quaitoon traveled the world, and that's where it was really inconsistent, the violence in the book, or maybe the characterization of the main character and his boyfriend, is that they, like, in some of these stories, they help people. They help people by exposing corruption, exposing bad deeds. And then in the next scene, he's like, so I was bathing in the blood of newborns.
Yes. It was strange. I remember that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, demon stuff.
Only excuse I have is they do whatever, they don't care at all. I don't know. Maybe they were bored, so they wanted to help for a change. I don't know. It was absolutely right. So then we find that Quintaloupe, so he's like a higher grade demon who can do more stuff. And his hobby, I guess, is to see what people make, like throughout the centuries, what kind of inventions.
Yeah, machines.
Machines. And we have to go to this super obvious like setup that was very unexpected, that they want to find the device that will change the world. And they mentioned Johannes Gutenberg.
Oh, I wonder what it could be.
So, yeah, this was kind of like another like meh.
I was honestly like not sure what was going to happen once they, like, okay, book
kind
printing.
Of guessed it
sure.
At this point.
That was an important invention. It did change the world, at least, like, changed how Western Europe, you know, operated and stuff like that. Sure. What are you going to do with that book? And the book does a battle between heaven and hell with it, which was like...
over the top?
Like, why?
Like, as soon as they said Gutenberg, did you assume immediately that that's how they imprisoned the demon?
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah, so that's like painfully, obviously predictable. So that was like a really bad point for me.
You have to like wait for the end to get the big secret how I got into the book. By the way, we went to Mainz. Like, okay. I guess, spoiler alert, yeah, printing press is the reason why they go to Mainz. To Johannes Gutenberg.
I like that that Johannes Gutenberg's wife is an angel in disguise, and the priest is a demon in disguise. So it's kind of
everybody is a demon or an angel like around him.
And the reasoning is that cruelty begins by ignorance, and if you read, you're not ignorant, so then it will change the world. And I guess the demons will not have enough cruelty if people read too much. So they have to fight the heavens over who's going to have copyright rights over the printing press.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the thing that I liked the idea where the archbishop and the head angel, they begin talking and negotiating who's going to get the souls who, you know, are influenced by this and by that, and that it was kind of like the things that you thought would be obviously good and angelic actually are not, and
I was waiting for something clever like that.
That was fun, kind of like to think
I was
about
waiting
it.
For some dumb joke, like, of course it wouldn't be here. I was waiting for something like, the devils get the porn magazines, and then they have the science journals, and then I'm taking the Linux documentation of C++, says the devil. And I said, of course it wouldn't be here.
I think, like, this idea that, like, heaven and hell is just, like, different parts of the same administration. I think Good Omens does that much better. and in a way that's much more coherent. Shall we say?
The whole book felt underdeveloped. I felt like there were a lot of seeds to a good premise, and none of them were developed like either at all or very poorly. And
yeah,
it was
kind of rushed.
Disappointing and rushed, yeah. Mm. So unfortunately. So what happens with the angel and the wife?
We should like mention how we got to Mainz. We got to Mainz, and there was like a big battle between angels and demons for who gets the rights to the printing press, right? And it's first like big battle, like physical battle in the streets and everything, and then it kind of moves slowly into this room, this like secluded room where the archbishop / main demon guy versus the wife of Johannes Gutenberg / the kind of a representative of the angels are arguing for what each of the sides should get. And like Butch kind of gets there, he's completely like almost dying and everything, but he gets there like, you know, just he's not supposed to be there, but he like looks peeks in the room and everything, and then there's like many other demons. Quitun is there, so he's like wants to be there to just like be close to Quitun, but also he's interested in what the demons and angels are arguing about. And yeah, and then we get this whole scene about like arguing who gets what, and that was kind of fun to see. Yeah, the merging of the demon and the angel in like one argumentative blob that kind of like decides on who gets what. But yeah, they both kind of, you know, felt like the same, you know, the different side of the same coin. Yeah,
so I guess they end up working together, like Christina said.
They kind of work together. Yeah. And what happened to the angel, you said?
Yeah, I'm not remember. I guess just nothing, just
I don't think anything happened.
They finished their discussion, but then they like found that Mr. B is there, like spying on them, and they're like, oh no, somebody is spying on us. We need to like contain this information, but we must not kill him on the holy ground.
This part I didn't get. Like, okay, there's a secret that the hell and the heavens now will control the printing press, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that, so if you know that, first of all, who's going to believe you? Second of all, why does it matter? Third of all, wouldn't they just kill the people who knew if they caused any problems?
Yeah, like they were killing left and right before, so
why
the demon
is Mr.
now?
Cantaloupe okay with this? Like, why is he excused?
Well, I assumed because he's with the archbishop.
Okay.
He's his underling. Like,
okay, that makes sense.
Mr. B is not like directly connected to their whole plot thing, so he's too much of a low level demon to like be contained, so
doesn't
they kind of
the
find
clearance.
A way. Yeah, he doesn't have to clear high enough clearance. That's right. So how do they get rid of him?
Yeah, of course. So the description how he turns into words and gets like turned into the book, it was interesting, but it was way too late. I think it should have been in a different way earlier, and then maybe if all that we just discussed, which is the whole book, was like the first few chapters, and then there was something creative with him doing stuff through the book to people, and then therefore to you, it would be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I hoped. Nice. But so
the book kind of ends with him being turned into a book by this like conglomerate of angels and demons, of course burning him into words. But like, to be fair, like, don't you think that that's like the worst idea? If you want to like contain this knowledge, why do they like make him into a book? That's the worst thing that you can
that's
do.
That's also a good point.
He can tell you the information through
exactly,
the book.
Yeah.
So
that's
anybody
a
can
point.
Read that book.
Like, he's
what the
just
fuck?
Done that.
Yes. Yeah, he's just done that to us. So like, did none of the angels and demons think of this? Like, what? Why?
It's absolutely true. That's a giant plot hole.
I mean, like, I don't think we can really... Like, plot holes? Nah.
Okay, yes. But it's true that it's completely flipped. Yeah, it's not. I guess you can put a sticker on the book and it says fiction.
Fiction for entertainment purposes only.
Any resemblance to anything real is highly coincidental.
Also, like, asterisk, do not burn.
So the like twist was that if you finish reading the book, I thought somebody said somewhere, you will release the demon. But no, if you burn the book, you will release the demon. And it's like
he just finished reading the book, he's trapped forever.
So he's kind of begging us to, at the end, to at least like pass the book on to someone else, which is, I guess, like his other chance to, you know, find some victim that would finally burn this book and release him from his suffering. Or, at, I guess, release him back into the world. As he puts it.
Like Christina, I'm sure, thought it was obnoxious, but I kind of like the, like, I'm two steps behind you, and as many books, as many pages as you read, as many steps.
Oh, that was obnoxious,
and...
yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It was kind of fun, but, like, it was obvious that it's not gonna, like, have much of a, like, it was obvious that it's gonna be, at the end, fizzle out into, like, couldn't do that. Like, I don't have that power.
Like, if you want your threats in the book to have some kind of an actual effect, you need to be able to deliver on them.
And if
he did something like what Philip said, that like, oh, I have actually like agents in the world who have already somehow been affected by the book, and they can be anyone you meet on the street, then okay, that might feel more actionable. But like, I am in my room. I know there is nobody behind me. I know I'm reading a book. And like, I will slash left and right, left and right. No, you won't. Shut the fuck up.
Come on with the voice. Awesome.
The relationship.
I liked it. Like, this is what I wanted from this book. I wanted him to be slashing left and right as you move your eyes on the lines left and right. And I was really, really hoping, this was like my wish for this book, and I don't even know if it's possible to be done, but I was really hoping there would be some kind of hook that we didn't notice, or some kind of subconscious something. Like, for example, all the book, he's trying to persuade you to burn the book, and it's revealed that you shouldn't do it. So what if the whole book, he was trying to make you do things that would make him stay in the book, place this somewhere and talk to this person here, or wear this, or don't read the book longer than 10 minutes, or wear a hat, or I don't know, take a hot shower, whatever you do. And then it would be like twisted that all those things were to release him, and you were doing them to like keep him in the book, and then you would kind of have been doing something, and you realize at the end of the book the like thing that would be the twist would be like, oh, you've been doing all the rituals to read the book and now I'm released and that's the end, or something like that. So I was thinking there could be something in there, but no, not here.
Do you know what it actually reminds me of? I just realized, like, a worse version of those creepy pasta things.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah,
but like a much worse version.
So thank you for reading. I am very sad because I love reading this. Even this, I didn't mind it. Like, it was meh. It was like, eh, but I didn't hate it. I like how he writes. I like what he writes. And every single person I make to read anything he writes is always disappointed.
You know what we should do?
Yeah.
We should record ourselves saying, don't listen to the podcast. You mustn't listen to the episode. We will kill
you
if you finish listening to the episode. And then, like, intersperse it in between. And,
That's awesome. Please have this voice forever.
Yeah, let's do that. That's perfect.
I'll put it at the beginning, before anything starts.
Okay.
Awesome. So anything, any parting words with the listeners today? Are you completely discouraged to ever read anything ever again from Clive Barker?
A little bit.
Yeah, I was afraid.
I don't think so. Like, I went into this with much higher expectations on the horror part, and you kind of persuaded me that the other books have much more horror. So I want to kind of try something that that I'm like kind of actually horrifies me in a way that I'll be horrified and not just like, you know, threats that cannot be really fulfilled, and some sort of like scenes that are kind of gross, but like okay, yeah, it's not very like terrifying in the long run. So yeah, if other books are more playing on this horror, or I would say even like terror, like psychological terror part, that would be fun.
My favorite from all his books is The Damnation Game. And I've read it a long time ago. And I remember it was the scariest, creepiest thing I've ever experienced in my life. But I was very young. So yeah, I don't know, I can recommend it. So maybe I can reread it myself as an old man and tell you later.
Okay.
So thanks a lot for listening. Thank you, Christina, for amazing demon voice. Please do that again.
Yes. And
I had no idea you had that in you. That's awesome. And see you on the next episode.
Okay. Thank you for having me.